Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
Hello. I'm so glad you could join us. I hope you brought your blanket to hide under. The spooky crew is going to discuss things and events from other realms. Ghosts, cryptids, aliens. Be sure to hold your blanket extra tight as the boys take you deep into the Fearscape.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another scary edition of Fearscape.
Tantalizing.
No, that was last week. This week's not okay. So tantalizing. Okay. This week it's a little more spooky. This week we got a episode that cuts a little close to home,
yep.
Literally, physically on the map. We're going to be talking about the Culbertson Mansion in New Albany, Indiana, which is right across the river from us here in Louisville, Kentucky. So we're going to be talking about Culbertson Mansion.
Yep. From Mr. Culbertson.
From the Culbertsons, not the Mansions.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
The Culbertson people.
Right.
But we've got some really, really interesting spooky news as well as creepy catch-up today.
Yep.
And so we're going to go ahead and jump. And in fact, because we have a little bit more, we're going to jump right into creepy catch-up first. So
yeah.
Flipping the script on you.
So why don't you go with your creepy catch-up first?
All right.
Creepy catch up. Y'all, it's creepy.
All right, so I was at the Bardstown where we did a ghost hunt last year, and we had a great show. It was a dramatically improvised play, so we did a serious play. It was like emotional. It was all these different things, and after we had cleaned everything up and we were leaving, we got downstairs and I was like, oh, hey, I realized I left my glasses and my notebook upstairs. I said, I'll be right back. So I go upstairs and I'm like, ooh, I forgot how spooky it is up here by myself, you know, like up in the theater. And it's kind of dark, just the light coming in. And then I felt something right, like hair tingling, felt something.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I'm out. And I didn't even shut the door behind me. And I get to the steps and I feel something shove me as hard as they can in the right side of my shoulder. So, you know, the steps of the Bardstown go down to a landing and then it turns. So it was right at that landing.
Yep.
I was just stepping down the steps and I fell and I had to grab the two handlebar handrails to catch myself. Like, it was like someone punched me in the shoulder, man. Like, it was crazy. And then I just felt like, because one of the things I realized we talked about, we sent that woman supposedly to the light,
right?
But we never did anything about the guy, right? And that's what I felt was this anger. Like this.
Well, and we sent away the person he was tormenting.
Right. And so I felt that man. And it's, man.
So
it scared me, dude. I get downstairs and everybody's laughing at me. And I'm like, I'm serious right now, man.
So we have to get back in there and do another investigation.
Yeah, or at least I'm just going to sneak in and just lay some sage down, man. Because, I ain't been physically messed with like that in a long time. I guess since Whispers Estate when I got scratched. But, like, man, that just, I don't know, it scared me. And it kind of threw me off because I was like, I could have, like, thrown my knee out. I could have sprained it.
Oh,
I mean, hell, I could have died. Right, if I had fallen down
and hurt your neck or something,
So
it could have been bad.
Yeah, I mean, and aside from that, just on the drive today to come over here to the studio, man, I kept thinking that I would see a car in my rearview mirror, like out of the corner of my eye. I look up, nothing, and this happened like a solid 15 times. Like, it wasn't like it was a one-time thing, you know, and I've driven that way before along the river.
Was it a black Cadillac?
No. It was injured cold. But no, it's like, you know, and I guess because I was on the way here to talk about paranormal stuff that it made me kind of question it, you know, especially because you and I have that story from back in the day where the lights popped on behind us in Shelbyville. So I don't know. I just I kept waiting to see a car, especially because it's like almost 5 o'clock. Right, so that road should have been packed anyway.
Sunny,
but nothing, nothing. Not any time was there anyone behind me each time that happened. Hmm. When there was a car behind me, it didn't happen. Like, it didn't catch the corner of my eye. So, I don't know. Weird.
Well, it's funny that, like, whenever you think you see something out of the corner of your eye and you try to recreate it by, like, looking somewhere else, but like, still kind of looking at the corner of your eye to see if you can still see it. Like, it never happens that way.
I said something to you earlier. It's like Brad said, like, every time you try to look for it, it ain't going to happen.
It's like that whole thing where, you know, if you're looking for a job, you won't find one.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't need a job. That's when they're all over the place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So is that your...
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I would like to say it was uneventful, but I got punched in the shoulder.
Yeah,
so it was very eventful. It just wasn't numerous.
Yeah. Still, though, that's pretty crazy. So this week has been a flurry of activity. You know, in our last show, I talked about how I'd never really experienced a lot of things. It's funny because, you know, you said, you know, now that you're kind of opening your paranormal eye, if you will, you're going to start to notice it all over the place. And it is like, it's like you said that. And then something here was like, oh, that's my cue.
Here come the game.
So, it started off with last week on like Thursday, I want to say, or Friday. I was in the kitchen and I was fixing lunch or something for Layla.
In Kentucky, so you were fixing some fixins.
Yeah, fixing some fixins. So one of my daughters and I was fixing something for her. And, I'm standing at my stove, and so you know that there's, like, that hallway in the kitchen. It's like a pass-through in the kitchen that goes from the living room through the kitchen into the dining room area. So, standing there at my stove, and I'm fixing stuff, and I see this shadow move past me on the left, going, like, from the living room area through the dining room area, and then, like, the stairs going down to the basement's right there. I see this shadow, like, go past me, and maybe a second later, the cat comes running past me, like, he's, like, chasing the shadow. So then the cat goes and, like, runs down the stairs to the basement, and he's sitting at the bottom of the basement, he's going, meow, 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 like, talking to something, right? So then I go, and I just kind of peek over the banister to see what he's doing, and he's staring at the top of the stairs, just, meow. Meow, meow, meow. You know, so I'm like standing close to the top of the stairs, like, what's going on, right? So that was one thing.
Well, precursor, I want to say, you know, what is a week or two ago, I blessed your house,
right?
So, I mean, the whole purpose was to get rid of only negative spirits.
Right.
We wanted to make sure that just in case any family members that have passed on and things like that. So I know I do my job pretty well. So what did that feel evil? Did it feel?
It didn't feel evil at all. I mean, it felt playful, honestly, is what it felt like.
Yeah. And speaking of which, the second I sat down here, when you went to go get a drink of water, your cat came right up and just rubbed his head on my hand. And he's very antisocial. So I thought that was very strange.
That's pretty cool,
I've only
though.
Been here a few minutes.
Yeah. But then. My daughters have this cat piano. That's the best way to explain it.
A cat piano?
It's a piano that looks like a big cat's face.
It's made of cats.
And, like, the cat's smile is the keys of the piano.
Okay, it's a very, like, Cheshire cat.
Type, yeah. And it's like it's orange, and you can make different sound. Like, you can make it sound like a piano, or you can make it sound like, you know, cats.
I was about to say, it needs to be a cat. Okay.
So anyway, we're... I'm trying to think the first time this happened. So the first time it happened, I was sitting putting Lily to bed. This is my other daughter. And, she, I closed her door, and she had had kind of a rough night. We, you know, she went to bed throwing a little bit of a fit, and the cat piano was on the couch, and I just heard meow, like from the cat piano. Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, I immediately look over to think, is our actual cat messing with the cat piano, you know, or something? There's nothing around. It's just sitting.
Like, what
by
night you're
going to
hear him harmonizing?
On the couch. So, yeah. So then that same day, or the next day, I get up. Again, kind of a rough morning. My kids are kind of throwing fits and stuff. Don't want to get ready. We get them off to school. I come back home. I am sitting on the couch getting ready to log into work. And I eat these little Clif bars for breakfast. That's what I have for breakfast every day. And it makes a distinct, like the wrapping paper, the wrapping of it makes a distinct sound. So I'm like, it's sitting on the table next to me. And I hear what sounds like, like you took your finger and you like pressed it down. Like you pressed the wrapper down. And I like look around. My cat's nowhere to be seen. Like he's not messing with it.
Oh, man.
I reach over. I'm like, I'm going to test this. So I take my finger and I go, and like I push down, and it makes the exact same sound when I press down on the wrapper. So, so then like later that night, again, my kids are like really, you know, they're throwing a big fit and they're just crying and screaming and yelling at each other and stuff. And Kristen's like, she's sitting on the couch and she's trying to hold Lily to try to get her to calm down.
It's like she's trying to hold her own composure.
And the cat piano is laying on the couch. So like in between us, like, so Kristen's sitting on one side and me and Layla are on the other, and the cat piano is laying right there, and the cat piano starts purring.
Does it purr?
Yes. It
makes get out. Get out now. We got to go.
So it makes a purring noise as part of the thing. So it starts purring, and then it starts playing meow, 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 meow. Like just random.
Ooh, man,
notes.
For a second it almost sounded like the hell your notes. Meow, meow, meow.
So now Kristen's freaking out because I've already told her about how the piano just raving noise, you know. So,
oh, I love it. I love it.
So it's like, well, let's turn this thing off. So we turn it off. Of course, Lily gets mad. She's like, no, turn it on, turn it on.
But, my friend was playing.
So, all right. Now, the next day, so I don't know, like Saturday or Sunday or something here now. Lily had the cat piano in her room, and she was playing with it that day. So no one's in the room. She goes in a room, and I hear the cat piano start to play, and I'm thinking, okay, she's playing with it. She brings it out, holding it in her arms. It's playing. Like, it's just playing random notes. And, like, it's not, like, the note. Like,
that's what I was about to ask. So
you
that,
can't see the keys pressing. It's just playing random notes on the cat piano.
Now, when's the last time you changed them batteries?
I mean, it's been a little bit. So
to play the skeptic, right?
So it could be the badge. And honestly, I looked it up. Like, I did a Google search for, like, the brand of it. Is it, you know, and asked, you know, does it do this when the batteries get low or something? And I couldn't find anything, but that doesn't mean
that
it's
doesn't
not,
mean anything,
you know,
right,
it's not
with
it.
Electronics. But so, I mean, electronics are things that ghosts love to play with.
Manipulate.
So.
Yeah, exactly. So
just wait. If you hear meow, 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 run. It's pan.
So, yeah. That's like probably just about it. So the only other thing that I got is, I got up to go to the restroom in my house the other day.
That is scary.
Yeah, I know.
We're over 40 now.
And when I went into the bathroom, I smelled my granddad's cigarette smoke.
Interesting. And so, of course, you nor Kristen smoke. So
no. And to our knowledge, the people who lived here before us didn't smoke.
Even then, you would have smelled it before then.
And obviously, honestly, if it were the smell that was in the house, we would have probably become nose blind to it by now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have noticed it, right?
Yeah. And I've definitely never smelled any smoke.
And he smoked a certain brand and it was very much that kind of smell from that brand. And so what I've kind of resolved is that my granddaddy is coming to visit, which again would not be any type of benevolence spirit. And so actually I've gotten to where most days I get up. When I get up in the morning, I talk to him.
Good. Yeah, he was a great guy, man.
When I'm leaving, I talk to him. When I come home in the afternoon, I talk to him.
Yep.
And, you know, since I've started doing that, activity's dropped off.
Interesting. Yeah, I do the same thing with my grandmother. I've felt her around for a long time since she's passed. And I know it's her. There's a difference between the energy of her and my other grandmother. I can always tell when Grandma Carol's popped in, right? I know it. But my grandma Phyllis, I feel her all the time, and I talk to her quite frequently.
Well, so what's really interesting, and my analytical brain stepped in a little bit, and I was like, you know, this kind of flurry, even this activity and some of the stuff I was experiencing before I had you bless the house, it all started when I started watching Hellier. So I don't know if that's just coincidence.
Well, I mean, I can look back and I can say from the start of the show, you know, you've slowly been introduced to things, but they were things that were easily kind of wiped away for you.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas Hellier, the whole point of Hellier is to explain everything that they've seen and where it comes from and back it up and things like that. And your analytical brain couldn't argue with that.
Right.
Right? And so, and it started to kind of open your eyes to things that have happened in the past and things like that and recently. And then, like I've always said, once you see it, you can't stop.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, it's just one of those things. So, like I said, I think Hellier was the catalyst that opened it. Like it was the thing that needed it.
Well, and one of my theories for Hellier is that there are both extraterrestrials, ultra-terrestrials, and dimensional beings. Like it's all in play. It's not one or the other, you know. And so, you know, I've talked about before. I think you know, like. So spirit energy is dark energy, and so that's, you know, we measure it in the environment. And so I'm like, I'm almost, so the back of my mind is that the reason that if it is in fact my grandfather, the reason that he's here is to help me process what I'm experiencing with Hellier. So because he's able to understand, or as an energy being, he's able to interface or to cross realms or whatever you want to call it.
Absolutely, you know, and I always believe that if that is true, they do cross realms and things like that, that their understanding is now complete. So if they had some religious background, you know, that kind of goes away because they are aware of what,
right.
You know, they may use that to comfort and to things like that, but they now know the real deal, whatever that may be, even if it is their religious faith, right? So they're able to kind of absolutely help in that regards, the way that they can.
Well, like I was thinking about it this morning, and I was thinking about residual haunts versus intelligent. There you go. I kept wanting to say interactive. But I wonder if, like, you know, so when you're born into the physical world, it takes a long time to understand and deal with the physical world, right? Yeah. So imagine that death is the birth into the corporeal world. And so it stands to the reason that you would take a long time to potentially grow in your corporeal self and understand how to imbibe or interact within that environment.
Correct.
And so residual haunts are people who potentially have not yet learned how to interact with their environment, where intelligent haunts are people who have. They've reached that level of understanding.
You know, or like we said, it's an energy that replays itself, or it is a spirit, a soul that is stuck reliving something over and over. And some theories out there say that is what hell is. It is them reliving something
over and over.
And sometimes we can catch it.
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So interesting. So I have one more creepy catch up.
All right.
And this kind of leads into a little bit of spooky news.
Cool. So we'll wrap that up and then we'll jump right into spooky news.
Sounds good. All right. So last night I came home kind of late, was out with some work friends, and it's already dark. And now I do, for posterity's sake, I have to say I did have one beer while I was out with friends. I also did consume quite a bit of bread.
Did you have a Budweiser?
No, I had a Guinness.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, because if it was Bud, you didn't really drink. So if you had a Guinness, you had beer.
That's my beer of choice.
So you did have bread. You had Guinness,
right? But I did also consume bread. So you know, and I followed it up with like two glasses of water. So I don't feel like I was in any way, shape, or form under the influence of alcohol, but I wanted to include that for our skeptics who might be listening. So in the night sky, where I live at, I can stand up on a clear night and see just so many stars in the sky. And it's
Dolly Parton's up there, John Malkovich, Brad Pitt, the stars.
Are the stars, yep. That's the new constellations.
That is. Yeah. Like 200 years from now, I'd be like, and what's your sign? Oh, I'm Brad Pitt.
Yeah. I'm Lee Harvey Oswald. Ooh. Oh.
Yeah, there's a lot to say about that. Yeah.
So anyways, I'm standing up here watching the stars, and I see, like, so traversing from, like, a southwest to northeast trajectory across the sky is four white lights, like stars. I mean, they weren't planes. They were really far up there. I mean,
right.
Far enough up there that they would look like stars. And I see one, and I'm thinking, okay, this might be the International Space Station.
Right.
But then evenly spaced behind it is three additional ones.
Oh, okay. So in a line.
In a line, all traveling, all evenly spaced. Now, they get to the top, like the arch, so directly above me, and I lose sight of them. And so I track their trajectory, and I don't ever see them come back down the other side of the arch. Hmm. So I'm thinking, hey, I just had a potential UFO experience here. Mm-hmm. So now, spooky news. All right, so this actually goes back to an article that came out back in October, I think, of 2019. And Tesla is launching, at total, when they get done, 14,000 new satellites into space.
Holy moly.
And this is for their new Lattice Internet system. So no longer will you need to have a physical line run to your house. Instead, you'll just be able to get on the Tesla network and with satellites in space.
Which is interesting because that's what Nikola Tesla
was
his whole thing.
Right.
Interesting.
So,
wow, that's cool.
So what I actually may have seen, because there's already several hundred in space, and they're pretty much on the same kind of flight path around the Earth. But they're, I mean, when they're all up there, they'll all kind of interlock with, not interlock, like physically, but, relationship and communication-wise with each other. And so no matter where you are on the planet, you can get internet service.
I like that because, man, I lived out in the country for a minute, dude, and it was like the stuff we had to do to get internet was dumb.
Well, and what's really interesting is I was reading through the article about it, amateur astronomers and photographers are really mad because now when you take a picture of the night sky, you're going to potentially have a bunch of stars that aren't really stars.
They've been complaining about that for a while, though.
I know, but you don't, right now, if I stand out of my backyard at night and watch the sky, I might see occasionally something that could be a satellite.
Mm-hmm. Maybe this is all part of the plan, though. Like, you got this where if you see a UFO, you're like, oh, it's one of them Tesla satellites, right? And so it's part of that government conspiracy to cover it up.
Or whatever conspiracy.
There has been a lot of conspiracy out there that Musk is part of a larger conspiracy, for sure.
He's a reptilian, maybe.
Maybe. He's a lizard man.
So that's a little bit. And then I have one more spooky news story that I thought was really interesting. This article came up yesterday, and this is from Nerdist.com.
I love Nerdist.
So this says, biological robots built for the first time ever.
I think I saw that.
So this was, I follow them on Facebook, and it was posted on Facebook. I was like, oh, that's really cool. So it says, prepare to have your brains blown to smithereens, everyone. Because scientists have created the first ever biological robots out of frog cells. And even though the little living machines are quite limited at this nascent stage of their development, there's still apparently enormous potential for what the awe-inspiring creatures may be able to do one day.
So this is similar to, say, Data? Or would he be not considered biological?
No, he's not considered biological.
What makes it biological, I wonder? Like, and then what makes it machine, right?
It's composed of biological material. Data's not really composed of biological material. He is synthetic.
Okay, so then it's all biological. So right. Then is it a robot then, if it's biological?
So I think what defines a robot is, can you program it to do something, and it performs that task.
Okay.
So a non-robot would have, or a robot would have, like, I guess, free will or thought.
Right.
And so Data had, although he was programmed to be Data, he could, you know, evolve, let's say,
right,
to become
right.
more.
Sure, sure.
You know, that was his thing, right? He was constantly.
He had AI. He was very
endeavoring
self-aware.
To become more.
Okay.
So, yeah. So it's I would say this is probably closer related to maybe the Borg.
Okay. But
even then,
cyborg.
That's
right?
Cyborg, right? So that's a little bit of hardware too. And a little bit of biological too. So I don't
okay,
know. But yeah. So the says here that the newly published study in the journal, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which comes via the Guardian, scientists from Tufts University and the University of Vermont outline how they were able to develop a method that designs completely biological machines from the ground up. The team of scientists that authored the paper, including Sam Kriegman, note an expensive array of disparate tasks the living machines may be able to take on, including the delivery of drugs inside the human body, eliminating the radiation from affected environments, and even exploring the limits of biological life's capabilities.
Hmm.
So that last little line, exploring the limits of biological life's capabilities, that's enhancements. That's basically what
okay.
that says. I mean, that's that's like the, what's the Aeon Flux?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what I was thinking, because I've been watching Star Trek Enterprise again. It's my last show left to watch. I watched all of them, the original Star Trek, Star Trek Next Generation,
yep.
blah, blah. I'd never watched Enterprise, and so I got to the last season, right? And I'm like, I need a break because I don't want to be done. So I recently, after like 3-4 months, finally picked it back up. And the episode I think I was talking to you about that has the Orion slave traders
right.
on there also had some augments on there, you know, the same people as Khan.
Right.
And so that kind of makes me think about that,
yeah,
too.
Khan, yeah.
Yeah, like the whole
augment people and
mm-hmm.
how they were used.
And it, yeah, that, you know, they want to say that they're evolved, but they're not because they were made that way. Yeah, okay.
Well, and then, you know, for anybody who doesn't remember or doesn't know, Julian, it's found that in Deep Space Nine,
yeah.
Julian Bashir is
yep.
pretty much an
He's
augment.
He's an augment, too.
So,
yep.
yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
Well, I have some spooky news too.
Okay,
that's actually spooky.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Mine's
science
more nerdy.
Is totally okay. I mean, we definitely hit that there because we're finding science fiction become science fact.
Right.
But let's get a little kooky spooky, okay? Because
right.
here on Coast to Coast, I find an article that reads: "Possessed man drives car into church."
Well, it was the drive-through exorcism.
So this says that a Spanish man who believed that he was possessed by a demon drove his car into a church to escape the dark forces. The bizarre incident reportedly occurred early Wednesday morning. This was reported on January 9th. This occurred early Wednesday morning at the San Juan Evangelista Church in the city of Sonseca. According to local police, the unnamed man was initially spotted ramming his Jeep into the front entrance of the building, which drew concern from onlookers. However, when bystanders asked if he needed help, the man simply dismissed the Good Samaritans and resumed smashing into the doors until they could finally burst open. He then proceeded to drive his Jeep all the way down the center aisle of the church, damaging several benches along the way. The vehicle ultimately came to rest right in front of the altars, which is where the man was found when authorities arrived. When questioned as to the motivation for brazen break-in, the distressed man told police that he was possessed by the devil and that the only place to find refuge from his demons was at the altar of the church. Unfortunately, he apparently did not explain why he didn't just walk into the building in search of spiritual aid.
Right.
The man was subsequently taken to a nearby hospital to treat injuries that he suffered during the proverbial drive-through exorcism attempt and to be tested for drugs and alcohol, which may wind up being revealed as the true cause of his perceived possession.
So I wonder if he tests negative for drugs and alcohol, I wonder if the church will just kind of forgive his... transgression.
They better. That's what they do.
Yeah.
That's what they do. I mean, at least he had enough thought in his brain, like, well, I need to go get this taken care of, you know, so.
Right. Now, I could go to White Castle, but instead I'm going to go to the church.
I don't know. Good luck, sir, and yeah. Good luck to the church. But, yeah, that is this week's spooky news. All right, Josh, we're here. Yeah. We're going to be talking about the Culbertson Mansion in New Albany, Indiana. Before we get into that, we actually got to slightly mention this as we were on Louisville's daytime talk show, Great Day Live,
yep.
this past week, and we got to talk about Culbertson Mansion a little bit, and so we wanted to just go ahead and make a shout-out to Angie Fenton and Bryce and all yep. those guys at Great Day Live, WHAS 11, for having us on.
It's always fun to be there, and it was it was really fun. You know, I got to pet a baby kangaroo, which
yes,
was awesome.
I did too. It was so awesome.
It was almost like petting a rabbit, like a really big,
big
rabbit.
Yeah. And, well, and this was a baby kangaroo. Right. I mean, this thing was smaller than a wallaby. And he said that the kangaroo's father was 6 foot. One and weighed 225 pounds.
He plays for the NBA.
Yeah. So that was really cool. But yeah, big thank you to them. And this is great. So we wanted to talk about Culbertson. So what do we got here?
Yeah. So Culbertson Mansion is a state historic site in New Albany, Indiana. It's kind of like pretty close to the Ohio River. And it was built in 1867.
No one was alive then.
By a gentleman named William Culbertson, who was...
That is, let me just tell you how crazy, what a coincidence, that the guy that built Culbertson Mansion also shared the name. It's
right.
Like Lou Gehrig. How did he get Lou Gehrig's disease? Like, ugh.
Yeah, no. It's like, how do they know where to put the deer crossing signs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like they know where their migration patterns are.
Yeah. You know, my friend Santosh has always said he wanted to create a sign that said purple and then it had an X on it so that it, because the X for crossing, so that it was perplexing.
That's awesome. That needs to be a T-shirt. So William Culbertson built it. He was once the richest man in Indiana. He built this house for a whopping $120,000.
Woo! You can look. I'm gonna look that up
to see what the
exchange
rate.
Man. Because I mean, right now $120,000. We're selling our house for less. So I'm like, oh man.
Well, what's really funny, and I didn't document this in you know what we're going through, but I found where it was sold to the. What's the Veterans of
Veterans of Foreign War?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, the VFW. Or as my grandpa Bill used to say, y'all want to go down to the VHW? Serious, not even joking.
So it was sold to them for $20,000 in like 1980 something or 60 something. Yeah, it was. So that's quite a hit on the overall value of the house, but. So this was the second Empire-style mansion. It has 25 rooms, 20,000 square feet. And, like, think about that. That's a living house. Like, not, it's like, not alive.
So it's like Amityville. It's right. Alive, is
but
what
it's,
you're saying.
But it's, you know, it was a living dwelling, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
With 20,000 square feet, I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, I don't know if we're... I'm sure we're still building houses like that, but I would expect California or the Northeast or something.
The house I'm selling is in Indiana. It's in Clarksville right next to New Albany. And so on my way home every day, like, I pass it. I pass the Culbertson Mansion all the time. And it's a whopper doodle.
Force to be reckoned with.
Tis a force to be reckoned with.
So, yeah, it was actually completed in 1869. And it was designed by a local architect, James T. Baines. That's an awesome, it's not Bames, but it's still close. James D. Baines.
James D. Baines.
It features a three-story edifice, included hand-painted ceilings and walls, frescoed ceilings, carved rosewood grain staircase, marble fireplaces, wallpaper of fabric quality, and crystal chandeliers. The original tin roof, hot cat on the tin roof,
rusted,
was imported from Scotland. The displays within the mansion feature the Culbertson family and the restoration of the building. The rooms on the tour are the formal parlors, dining rooms, bedrooms, kitchen, and laundry room.
Wow. Well, let me tell you this. The inflation calculator has spoken.
Okay.
In today's money, $120,000 would be the same as $2.3 million.
Wow.
So that's a crazy amount of money back then.
Right. That was insane. Well, and it says here that, like, in its heyday, there was a railroad that ran behind the house, mm-hmm. which Culbertson had. He owned the land that it was ran on, and so he sold that to the railroad.
All company. That money back then was in the rail. Every bit of it.
So he had a railroad behind his house and a streetcar in front of his house.
Was that streetcar named Desire?
It might not have been. So, really interesting here. I was this anecdotal information, but there's a Titanic museum type thing in Gatlinburg.
Oh yeah.
And I went a couple years ago when I went through and did that, and they take you into like this reproduction of the grand staircase that was on the Titanic, mm-hmm. and they're like, okay, look down at your feet. Do you know what you're standing on? And everybody looks down and they're like, oh, it's marble or it's granite or whatever. It was linoleum. When the Titanic was built, linoleum
was the big thing. Isn't that crazy how something that was so expensive at one point becomes so super cheap? And it's like the cheap. I mean, technology is that way.
Right.
I mean, you think about it.
Well, just when you go and buy a new house and you say, okay, what kind of floor is this? And they say linoleum. You're like, okay, well, can we knock $5,000 off the price?
Oh, man, is that going to happen to me?
Not if you paint it. So, yeah. So, okay, let's get into a little bit of spookiness of the Culbertson.
Yeah, so this is known haunt. I mean, even Angie Fenton was talking about how they did a story on Culbertson Mansion years ago. I know they do a haunted house as well as haunted tours. Now, when I went to the haunted house back in the day, it was actually in their carriage house, and it was one of those haunts, not unlike This is Haunted.
Right.
But I know a lot of the stories came from, the alleged hauntings at the mansion.
The actual living space.
Yeah, and things like that. Louisville Ghost Hunter Society is also one that went, our good buddy Keith Gage.
Yep, this next little bit of information comes from the Louisville Ghost Hunter Society website.
Awesome.
So it says, it's 1976 when the state of Indiana accepted the mansion from the historic New Albany to be maintained as a state historic site. Staff members are only allowed to tell the ghost stories during October for Halloween events. So if you rent the venue, mm-hmm. they can't tell you any ghost stories.
Really?
I wonder why that is. Maybe if they're afraid it'll downplay the...
Maybe downplay or...
the historic nature of the
that's
property.
Possible. Or
people won't want to come
people
visit
don't want
it.
Something hokey, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I mean, we are lovers of paranormal,
right.
So of course we think we're a majority, but when in actuality we're the minority, so...
I mean, if you're trying to rent a space for a wedding, you don't want everything that you Google to come back with the parlor room is haunted.
Yeah.
You know.
Many people were alleged to have died here.
Right. Exactly. You don't see people lining up to do weddings at...
because it is not cheap to get there. Even Angie Fenton was talking about she did her wedding pictures there. They did one of those day before shoots, and they did it on the staircase and stuff. She said she couldn't even get up the stairs because, A, she had already been there reporting on it, so she already knew, but she said she just got the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
Getting close to the second floor.
You know what? For all those people who are like us, who love the paranormal, they should do weddings at Waverly Hills.
Yeah, there's people that already have. Let's be honest, man.
That's true. So it basically says, the general consensus is that the source of most of the paranormal activity is Cornelia, the second of William Culbertson's three wives.
My man.
And this is actually who he built the mansion for. As a wedding gift.
Okay.
That's a pretty nice wedding
gift. I'm like, the other two wives were like,
Right.
Or they probably all died of diphtheria. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's like Oregon Trail.
Oregon Trail.
New Albany Trail.
Yeah, Culbertson Mansion is the new Apple II game.
You get to play as Cornelia.
So, Cornelia died in her second floor bedroom. but her ghost seems to be concerned with the renovation and upkeep of her 25-room home. So it's like, y'all need to wipe off that counter. You need to dust these windows, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff.
Well,
so.
I mean, you know, that sounds pretty cool because it sounds like Mr. Culbertson was like, you know, I want you involved in every bit of this. This is
right.
your gift. And
right.
so she probably had a hand in designing and all of that stuff, which, you know, for a woman at that time, she probably wasn't officially allowed to do things like that. You
right.
know, so.
Well, and she likely had a big hand in how it was decorated.
Absolutely.
And all that kind of stuff. And so if they've come in and moved furniture around and everything, she could be pretty ticked off.
Mm-hmm.
So, the visitors and staff members, including the historic interpreter creator, Jolin Bai, have caught glimpses of her dressed in period attire on the second and third floors.
Yeah.
So, this gets back to, you know, Angie was talking about she couldn't go up to the second
floor.
Yeah.
She kept feeling like someone was there.
Yep. So, Bai says a parapsychologist associated with the University of Louisville, which I would love to know if they're still there, because that'd be awesome to have
yeah,
on the show.
Yeah, for real.
visited the mansion in September 1985. He suggested that the house had a spirit of its own and might be causing the disturbances itself because it was unhappy with its condition.
Hmm.
So, this is where, you know, we did that listener story, I think it was last week or the week before, about the house that she saw burning.
Yes, that was like 2 weeks ago,
yeah.
I think.
And it was, you know, we talked about, did the house, was the house itself a residual
right.
haunt?
Right.
And so, you know, could the house actually be its own spirit?
There's also theories, too. I know they had told us this at Whispers Estate, that there was a spirit that showed up that was, in fact, like, lording over all the other ghosts that were in the house. Like, it was some sort of shadow creature or demon that was essentially possessing spirits that were already in the house and forcing them to do things. So that was really interesting.
Well, that reminds me of the Smurl family haunting.
Yes, that same,
right?
same idea.
So that was
yeah.
like the demon came in, used the existing spirits to its bidding.
Yeah. So that
so,
it
yeah.
that it so that it would, you know, you would see something human like.
Right, exactly.
I don't know. Interesting.
It's, yeah.
It's like, I'm going to hurt you, but I'm going to be courteous so that you don't see my true form.
Right. Because I don't want to make you have nightmares.
Yeah.
So it says here that he also warned the staff about the strong negative energy he senses were picking up around the third floor punishment room, which is a 4-foot square cubicle of lattice work where the strict Culbertsons lock their children when they misbehave.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm sure this all got.
Yay.
Let's just, if we can ever do an investigation here, I would like to do an Estes session in that room.
Yes, well, apparently we might not be able to except for in October, so.
Yeah, well.
Still, I would love to do that.
Yeah,
yeah,
that would be amazing.
Man, I hate that because I'm still thinking back to the Whispers Estates getting sold because, man, they have this closet that just scared me. It was one of the kids' closets, and
yeah.
I felt more activity in that closet than anywhere else.
Well, it's like I talked about my grandmother's house, the house that was the farmhouse that I pretty much grew up in the room that I slept in when I was older. There was a mural painted of the boy
mm-hmm.
who had lived in that room and died
yeah.
in that room. And so that was always really
creepy. Yeah.
Yeah, like I had to pretty much keep it covered up. Like I couldn't not have the mural covered up when I was in the room.
Dude, when I was a kid, so my best friend growing up was a girl named Nikki, and she had a spare bedroom, and that's where I usually slept. Well, the spare bedroom was also her playroom, right? But anyways, her house was haunted as a mofo. I mean, her mom used to tell us all these stories of her mom, like, so Nikki's grandmother coming.
Yep.
And oddly enough, I mean, like, her dad died while we were kids, and then Nikki passed away when I was, like, 20, 21, mm-hmm. right? And the only child. So, I mean, yeah, that house was always haunted. And they had decided to redo their front porch. And Nikki and I had always felt like the room underneath the porch was the most active.
Yeah.
And after that point, things got crazy. I mean, stuff would just fall over and stuff like that.
Wow.
And this is where it's silly, but it's like I would sleep in that room, and she was in love with Kevin Costner from Robin Hood. So she had, like, all these posters of Robin Hood stuff.
You do.
Exactly. She had Robin Hood posters everywhere. But there was this one. It was just his head. And I was like, I swear, I kept seeing him watch me, and I could see see his eyes move and stuff like that. Like
it's like Viggo from Ghostbusters 2 with just a floating head.
That's exactly what it was like, but it was Kevin Costner.
Yeah. So the staff continues to be plagued by incidents they cannot explain. So they did, you know, somebody did tell us that they have a file going back to like 1977.
Yeah.
Of just all the crazy stuff that they've documented along the way. We've got to.
If you're listening, please give us access.
Right.
Let us know. You can give us an email, right. fearscapepodcast@gmail.com. We will continuously be reaching out to you.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Really want to see just a little glimpse of some of the stuff that's in that file. So some visitors have felt an invisible presence behind them, and some have been touched by unseen hands, touched by an angel. I have personally heard thumps in empty rooms. This is again written by the LGHS individual. Witnessed furniture that have been overturned in locked rooms, and felt the energy of a presence I couldn't see.
Shoot, and he even said, like, he was talking about a heavy harp that they have in the formal room, like, that keeps turning itself around. This large spinning wheel keeps being rotated on its own. Footsteps are being heard. I mean, there is so much. This is just this one guy's account, but they're very similar to some of the ones that we found.
Right, exactly. And so, so let's actually jump into some of the stories that we got.
Yeah, so we reached out to our listeners, and we got two stories from people. And the first one comes from Shannon Sedell. I apologize if I'm not saying that correctly, but she said this.
So my stepdad and mom got married in Culbertson before they stopped doing weddings there. My sister and I were the only ones upstairs changing for the wedding. There were no windows open, no breezes. There was a large closet door on the other side of the room with just us in it. And it literally slammed shut while we were both in there. It gives me chills even to this day just thinking about it. But boy, we ran down those steps so quickly.
Yeah, that's... I've actually been in rooms where it's... you can't explain why doors close or why they sag open.
When we were at Whispers Estate, listen to our Whispers Estate episode. We had a door that just went open and then slammed against the wall, like opened, slammed against the wall. It was crazy. And we talked to the lady there and she's like, that's a new one. But I mean, we heard it latch, like unlatch and open.
Right.
It was nuts, dude.
See, I wonder if, if paranormal type activity like that is different for different experiencers.
Sure, absolutely.
It's tweaked almost for the person.
I would absolutely say yes, because certain people have, in my opinion, an ability to sense things more differently. Brad kept seeing his dad, who passed away when he was younger. He kept seeing his dad in things, right?
Yeah.
Like that was an image for him and a feeling that he kept feeling and almost taunting him with, right?
Yeah.
I got scratched. No one else got any physical anything happened to them, but I got scratched on both sides of my neck. Just different things for everybody, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I absolutely believe that.
So this next story comes to us from Jason Harper.
My wife and I were on a night tour once, a few years ago, and smelled flowers in the children's room on the third floor. As soon as the tour guide came in behind us, the smell dissipated.
So smells is one. Yeah,
yeah.
We'd read about cigar smoke.
Yep, cigar smoke.
Flowers, rose smell.
Yeah, so I mean it's bottom line is there's quite a bit going on at Culbertson Mansion. And again, I would love to take a peek at that file, but, we're going to have to see if we can get in there sometime. Maybe we can, butter somebody up or something.
Yeah.
If you're listening.
We will. We're very, very interested. And we take the stuff very seriously.
We do.
And we'll keep up with it. But can people go on tours and things like that?
If you Google, Culbertson Mansion, there's great information. I'm sorry I did not pull the website, but I think it's maybe in Indiana Historical. If you Google Culbertson Mansion, and I think maybe...
make sure you look in the Indiana one, because there is Because Culbertson Mansion comes up first. It's the bed and breakfast that's in Louisville, and that's not the correct one. No, but there is the IndianaMuseum.org/Culbertson. That one is the Culbertson Mansion State Historic Site. Yep. That's the actual.
They do tours. Like I said, they do have event space for rent. We actually, my high school 20-year reunion was at the Carriage House, which is behind.
Which is where I went to the haunted house, so that's pretty cool.
They do the haunted house every year at Halloween.
Yes, they do. No, it's, you know, not only is there the spooky stuff, but you can also tour the mansion, you know, for the regular stuff. There's, like, lavish Victorian lifestyle that is apparent, which is all through this area. I mean, Louisville, I mean, Southern Indiana, I love this area. There's inlaid woodwork, hand-painted panels, the vast gold leaf ceilings. All these are works of art.
Right.
As you view the grand parlors, the dining room, the bedroom, the kitchen, the laundry room, the realism of the period that it existed in might cause you to expect some of the Culbertsons to join you on the tour. And so listen to your senses and be on guard, because maybe one of them actually will. So, yeah, make sure to go. Check out Culbertson Mansion. Let them know that the boys from Fearscape sent you. And, you know, you could take tours there. You can just go right outside the front and take pictures. Yeah.
Stuff. The architecture is so beautiful and so amazing. And even the architecture, or the fit and finish on the inside, is just also beautiful.
Yeah, it looks like for adults it's $11. Though if you're a member of the Indiana State Museum and Historical Sites, you get in for free, of course. Seniors are $9, youth are $6. Totally worth it. Like I said, make a day of it. Go down to Old Louisville, check out the Culbertson, or the Conrad, whatever it is, Culbert. There's a lot of C's here. Conrad Caldwell House. Yeah. You can see that. The Pink Palace. There's all sorts of really cool stuff to see in this is Kentucky, Anna.
And it's Oh, man, I totally lost my train of thought what I was going to say.
Culbertson had railroads.
They also had a streetcar. no, but the... Yeah, I'm not going to get it back. It's gone.
That's okay. Maybe you'll think of it after the fact. So, because I want to move right into our listener story, because we've got Wanda Kenley's back. So she sent us two stories.
Yep.
So last week's long story was just incredible. And then later on, she realized she had another story. And so we have another one. And as just a reminder, those of you... Those of you that are listening, you can send in your own personal listener stories to us. You can send those to fearscapepodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet those to us in a direct message or any of those things. You can type them up, or you can even record yourself. We would love to have your recorded voice on here.
And we now have also the option, if you go to our website, fearscapepodcast.com, there's a comment section at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And that'll drop to us as well.
Yeah, so you can even put it right in there. Just share your story. I mean, you saw Jason's story from Culbertson was literally a sentence and a half. So they don't have to be long. We love them. We could even, you know, maybe a day we have two or three short ones back to back, right? So, but this one comes from Wanda Kenley from Haunted History of Kentucky. This is a cool story. So I'm going to go ahead and read that here.
In 1993... shortly after my daddy died, I had what I believed to be a visit. My husband and I had been fussing, and I had a few other things going on. I ended up on the sofa for the night. I was crying because I was so upset. I was facing the back of the sofa with my back to the television, just crying out. And then, all of a sudden, I felt these loving arms around me. I realized that I had probably awakened my daughter, and she had come to console me. And so I raised myself to turn to her and just let her know that everything was all right. But no one was there. And I'll tell you what, I think it was my daddy.
Hmm. Well, I know like I said at the beginning, I mean, my feeling of my grandfather being here is very comforting to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can see where that would be very comforting to
Absolutely.
Her.
Absolutely. And I know my question is was it the same house? Yeah. Yeah. You know, like that house that she lived in before? I don't know. Not that that mattered. I mean, though, I do think that certain areas are kind of like a portal, so to speak. Well, you know, I mean, an energy spot.
I've lived 4 different places since my grandfather died.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I don't think it necessarily matters what house I'm in.
Yeah, it's maybe
where,
not. Yeah.
Where I am, right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
But thank you, Wanda.
Yeah, thank you for that story.
I really liked that. That, you know, we get a lot of scary stories and scary things happening, much like your last story. But, you know, it's nice to remind that, you know, there are many spirits out there that don't intend harm.
Right.
Not every ghost is evil. Not every spirit wants to cause you harm. Some are just there because they're curious. Some are just there because they miss you.
Yep.
Some are just there because they're protecting the place they lived.
Right.
You know, and they're just there. Yes. So who knows?
You know, some are there to protect the loved ones. That they,
absolutely. So, I don't know. Did you remember what you were thinking of?
Yeah, so I was going to say that the Culbertson is the ticket price goes towards their restoration.
Oh, fees. That's even cooler.
So, and they're actually doing, so one of the things that they're doing is they're trying to do a restoration and not a renovation.
So
the difference is a renovation, you might come in and put brand new, you know, low E windows in. A restoration is trying to make it like it was when it was constructed.
Exactly, so, which costs a lot more.
A lot of money.
A lot more.
Especially because you have to, it's the creation of those old items, like wood and windows and things, but to current code.
Right.
And so it's really expensive to do that.
Well, it's really interesting because a lot of historical homes and jewelers and things like that are having trouble restoring things made of ivory because ivory is illegal now, you know? And it's like, it's this crazy thing because they're in this loophole, or not a loophole, but a catch-22 because they can only do things in a historic home that fits that historic standard.
Right.
Yet they can't do it because it's illegal, you know? So it's like, it's crazy. I mean, and please, dear gods, don't go out there and get ivory, guys.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
We do not agree with it. I was just using it as an example.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a really good example of when it's just, and there are companies out there that specialize in restoration materials, right? They that's what they do. But you're right. I mean, there's cases where you just can't find it anymore.
Yeah. But yeah, so we're going to get out of here, but thank you guys so much for tuning in as usual. Make sure to check out our website, fearscapepodcast.com. You guys will notice we're looking to slowly start to build a store. Some of you have asked if we've got merchandise, and so we're working on putting together some shirts and some things like that if you want to wear us. That sounds like your skin.
I want to wear my skin suit. Yeah, my skinwalker.
Yeah, so, but that's out there. We hope you guys like the new logo and all the different things we've been working on and trying to make this just an even better podcast for you guys. So, please make sure to rate and review wherever you listen, whether that's on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all of them.
Anchor, if you just go to Anchor.
Yeah, just go to Anchor. We love us some Anchor, obviously. Right. But yeah, all that stuff. And if you have any questions or comments, you know, find us on our social media, Fearscape Pod. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yep.
You know, find us on there, hit us up, you know, let us know just what you thought about stuff. We love to hear back from you guys.
Like to get some feedback. That's right.
That's right. So other than that, we're going to get out of here. We're looking forward to next week. We don't like telling you ahead of time because it's a surprise. But yeah, I hope you guys will enjoy next week. And on that, my name has been Stefan, and I will catch you on the flip side.
This has been Josh. The truth is out there.
And remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I'm so glad you were able to join us for that horrifying discussion. I hope they didn't frighten you too much. Tune in next week for even more research into the nightmarish and haunting creeps and spooks that we tell ourselves don't exist, but we know they do. Make sure you have your blankets, that you hold them extra tight. Next time on Fearscape.